have some IT people up here just in case
you need their services. So now that you're hooked up, it's 10:15, we're a little late. This is a continuing dialogue with the commission, Consolidated Commission on Utilities. We have interested parties throughout the renewable energy spectrum. And so specifically focusing on net metering and the value of solar and the cost avoided that happens. So we're trying to work our way through this. We are not rushing this through. We put out a study on avoided costs from One Power Authority. Everybody's looking at it. We've had a very good discussion over several meetings. Now, through the auspices of Jeff Pakola and Marianas Energy, we have a gentleman, Ben Norris, who is going to give us an overview on value of solar and storage on Guam. And then the presentation goes quite a bit into detail. So, John Beneventi has kind of like his group here. They may stay and go back and forth, in terms of some of the issues that they like to make sure you hit, Ben, or, some of their thoughts. But actually today, it's not to really discuss the study, because it doesn't exist yet, right? But it's just to start. This is, Jeff and I talked, and he said to me, this is a kickoff on the joint. It's a kickoff to the study. So that's where we are. Still no decisions are being made. We're trying to continue to gather information. When your study is done, we'll have another meeting. You will disseminate the study. Let everybody take a look at it. Okay, that's where we are today. So you're not going to get a lot of questions from the commissioners, I don't think. We may give you anecdotal thoughts maybe, but not a whole lot. But Ben, the floor is yours. Jeff.
Yeah. I'm going to do a real quick intro, and then Ben can take it from there. So thank you very much to the Guam Power Authority, to the CCU Commission for having us here today. We appreciate that. We feel it's a historic day for Guam. To get this study up and running. And it's going to be a study that's going to be independent. Okay, even though that Michael Utah Renewable Energy is paying for it, it's not our study, it's an independent study. So it's going to be data that's going to be harvested from the Guam Power Authority, data harvested from our industry, and Ben's going to go through a little bit of that study on how that's going to be put together and unfolded. As we know, this is a debate that's been going on for a very long time. 2015, there was 175 debates across the United States on them. Last year, 2016, it was 2012. And this year, it's expected to rise again. So I think this value of solar study gives us a very clear foundation on what our energy is worth to the utility. As we all know, the story is a familiar one with net metering, the solar industry, has our version of what our energy is worth. And we can't take Hawaii, we can't take any other state. This has to be a Guam-specific study on what this energy is worth. And that's what this study is going to unfold. So we hired Mr. Ben Norris from Clean Power Research. Glenn, and you can talk a little bit about yourself, but Ben has done this throughout the United States. Numerous studies on the value of solar, so he was definitely the best firm and the best gentleman to come out here and kick this study off. So this study, that's exactly what it's going to do, the value of solar. So when a study is done, and we're predicting it's going to take about 60 to 90 days to unfold the study, and then we'll hopefully all come back here as not only, the CCU Commission and the Guam Power Authority, but ratepayers, and that's all ratepayers, not just solar energy customers, but every ratepayer, and then find out what this energy is worth and how it's going to be fair to the Guam Power Authority and fair to our industry. So with that being said, Mr. Ben Norris from Clean Power Research. Thank you again.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. So I should also say that as Clean Power Research really intends to be somewhat neutral in the whole net metering debate, if you will. So, So from our point of view, we're not here to advocate for net metering or against net metering. We're here to simply do a quantitative study that hopefully informs the discussions in some ways and is an input to the energy policy on the island. Here's what we'll be covering today. First, I'd like to just give an introduction to Clean Power Research, who we are and what we do. Kind of an overview of solar valuation, and then touch a little bit on our objective for this study, which is somewhat new, actually. Some of the methods for doing the valuation are pretty well established now, but the new element is storage, right? And so that's going to be a big part of our discussion today is how storage could be used and where some of the quirks of storage and hopefully that'll help inform the discussion as well. Then there's a framework, and if you look at the various studies in the different states and so on, you'll see that there's a lot of confusion that comes up simply in how the results are presented and what exactly is being valued and so on. So a lot of the misunderstanding just something has to do with basically framework issues, how you're defining the study. So we'll be covering that. At that point, we can take a little break before we get into the technical analysis. So that's kind of an overview. And we're thinking that those who don't want to get into the weeds, you know, don't have to stay for the rest of the presentation. And then if anybody's left in the room at the end of the break, we'll continue and cover the technical analysis. And that's the part about, well, how do you get the hourly production values? How do you get the hourly, simply, you know, what is the output of these systems? And solar is fairly straightforward, but there's some fleet effects that we can talk about. And then with storage, how do you charge it and discharge? How do you dispatch it and so on? So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then economic methods, that's where we go into the nuts and bolts of each of the benefit categories, you know, we're looking at generation capacity and fuel savings and this and that. And we can just talk about what this, how we would approach a study like that. Then the components, the proposed components and scenarios, that's value components, and what the scenarios would be, what technologies we're talking about here. And that's simply going to be, you know, once we kind of settle on that, we'll be able to conduct the study. And then we're going to need a lot of input data for the study, so there's just some information there. And specifically, we'll be looking to GPA for some of the data, and we'll look to MRE for the rest of the data. One of the things that would be helpful in the kickoff meeting is if you do have suggestions or something that you anticipate being problematic or that would improve the study in some way, please, I hope you'll speak up. And the intent is to make this as valuable an exercise as possible. So with that, Clean Power Research, I'm based out of Napa, California. That's the research and consulting group. Our company is largely a software company that supports the industry. And there's three primary areas that we are engaged in. One is customer engagement. That's our Watt Plan family of products. And what Watt Plan does is this is the software that can sit on the utility website and enable the utilities to become kind of like the informed educator of its customers, right? And so if you want to, say, provide a portal to customers to enable them to figure out what's solar worth to them, or what are electric vehicles worth to them, how much is it going to cost, and what are the savings in terms of gasoline and so on. If you put solar in, what are your bill savings going to be, depending on your rate plan and so on. That's Watt Plan, and it really helps to allow the utility to engage with its customers and become the trusted energy advisor for them. Then we have PowerClerk, and what PowerClerk is a tool also for the utilities. And I should say, Watt Plan could be either utilities or energy agencies, you know, the state energy agencies, that they can use Watt Plan to help their state residents. PowerClerk is definitely directed to utilities. And so with all of the distributed energy resources being installed on the grid. These are lots, you know, maybe perhaps thousands of resources going in, and there's oftentimes a backlog, and there's a process that has to be followed. And PowerClerk helps the utility manage that process. So all of the contracts can be, you know, uploaded and signed, and all the approvals that have to be made in which order. Some of these are customer-facing, some of them are internal, getting the engineering to sign off, doing the interconnection study, that kind of thing, giving the final permit to operate. That's all handled through PowerClerk. And one of the interesting things about PowerClerk is, as we have been doing over the several years, is it also collects information about these PV systems. You know, not all PV systems are alike. Some of them are facing into the east, and some are facing south, and some are facing west, and some of them, they have different ratings and different equipment. And as you get more and more solar on your system, what becomes important is being able to forecast the output. So, for example, in California at the ISO, we collect the data through PowerClerk. We have 180,000 PV systems that we have stored in the PowerClerk database, and that enables us then to provide, you know, day ahead, 12-hour ahead, 24-hour ahead forecasts to the grid operator, and then they can dispatch units accordingly. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Solar Anywhere is our product where we have that solar data that's anywhere. It's basically a satellite resource. We take the satellite image, you know, every half hour, for example, depending on where you're at, and you can translate that to an irradiance value in every pixel. And so you can use this to model historically what the solar system should be doing. You can also, we also have algorithms in there that provide the irradiance forecast over the next day or 2 days or what have you, that can use the PowerClerk specification. So that's kind of an overview of the software group. And then in all of these three areas, I'm in research and consulting, which sort of spans all of these areas. So my work is related to solar modeling, fleet modeling, economics, and so on. By the way, another interesting thing in PowerClerk, I just didn't mention, it's just kind of cutting edge here now. Through NYSERDA in New York, we're working with a utility there to use PowerClerk. Part of the issue there is this huge backlog of interconnection requests. Maybe you're not there in the long yet, you know, but at some point that might be an issue. I don't know. And so for these systems, it takes time to go through and do kind of a circuit by circuit analysis, which, you know, you're looking for over voltage conditions or whatever, backfeed on the feed of these systems to enable that interconnection request to take place. And so what we'll be doing in New York here is working with a software company that does this circuit engineering analysis to automate the process. So it could be as simple as the customer, you know, the contractor fills out the form. This is the system that we're proposing to install. Here's the location. Here's the meter number. And, you know, presto, poof. It goes out and it does that. It's got the data for all the transformers and lines and regulators and whatnot on the line. And it does that evaluation and gives it a thumbs up, or maybe a more manual study is required for larger systems, for example. But it really streamlines that process. What I've been mostly focused on is the solar evaluation work and the fleet modeling work. We have worked over the years with utilities, with energy agencies, and with renewables organizations. And this is kind of in a way, it's a bit of an art, you know, because as every study we do, it seems like the methods must be customized, and the interests, you know, if you're talking to a PUC, you know, they might have some interest. If you're looking at talking to a utility, they might have other interests, and so on. And so we have, you know, a little bit of a breadth in this area. So what do we mean by solar evaluation, and how do we do this? So value is representing a very locality-specific result of long-term savings. Minus costs that may be imposed on the system of distributed solar. When we talk about value of solar, we're not talking about an incentive. We're not saying, oh, we need to pay. pay this customer so many cents per kilowatt hour as an incentive for them to install solar. That's not what we're talking about. But, you know, every jurisdiction is different. It doesn't mean you can't have add-on incentives if you want. One of the things that we find, you know, very clearly in this discussion is we have to differentiate between some of the benefits that we get from solar are utility avoided costs, you know, fuel avoidance, for example. That's very clearly a savings to the utility and its repairs. On the other hand, some of the benefits accrue to, you know, the citizens of the island, right? There's societal benefits. And it's a little tricky because the utility doesn't get anything from that other than being good citizens, right? And so we need to sort of differentiate them and these societal benefits. The utility avoided costs, first of all, are calculated in such a way that the utility, you know, if we do the calculations right, it should be essentially indifferent, right? So if you want to deliver a kilowatt hour to the grid, you know, simply put, the utility would be indifferent to have that, for having that, the cost of generation, you know, to have that kilowatt hour provided by a conventional resource or by a, you know, solar resource from an energy standpoint. If we do the calculation right, the utility should be indifferent. That's what we know by value. It's an avoided cost. On the other hand, the societal benefits, if we want to include those in the study, those are benefits to the ratepayers, but don't represent the savings to the utility. So if the island of Guam wants to recognize those benefits, that's really a public policy decision. I'm not here to advocate one way or the other, but if we want to include those in the study just for information, we can, and we can calculate those. We're trying to, first of all, accurately account for all the cost and benefit streams. For this study, we want to, where possible, we want to simplify the input data. These studies can get real complicated real fast, depending on how we do them, and simplify the methodology where it's more. We're trying to kind of inform the discussion, right? So where possible, we want to simplify and essentially provide transparency to all of the stakeholders. So rather than taking all the data, putting it in a big black box and do all the number crunching, and here's the result, you know, you can't get your hand around that. We want to provide transparency as far as possible. And this is an example framework. Now this comes from a study we did for the Maine PUC a couple of years ago. There may be some elements of this study that we can use in Guam. There may be differences as well. But I just wanted to lay this out just as kind of a starting point here. And what we see, so for Maine, we have these lists of categories. And some were benefits, like avoided energy costs. And some were costs, like regulation and so on. And so step one is you kind of have to decide these categories. Which categories should be included in a study like this? To take some maybe that are not so obvious, the avoided fuel price uncertainty, okay, and we'll actually be talking about that later today, but that represents the benefit that solar is providing in reducing the exposure to risk that the utility faces in uncertain fuel prices as you go into out years. So that's one that sometimes when we do these studies, say a PUC would want to know that information. But others might say, well, we really don't, you know, the utility job is not to really hedge beyond maybe a couple of years, so we really don't consider that a value, so we wouldn't include that category. But the point is, you have to kind of go through these and decide which categories we want to include in a study. They'll each go through a methodology and they have a value. In some cases, some of them are capacity related, whether it's distribution capacity or transmission capacity or generation capacity. And so we have a factor in here that basically accounts for how well the alignment is between the output of this resource and the system peak. So where there's good alignment, in the ideal case, we would have a factor of one because it would be a fully dispatchable resource. In some cases, you may have a very low, effectively a very poor match. And in that case, you know, when solar just doesn't match the system peak or the distribution peak, well, you can't really claim a capacity benefit there. So this is the tool that we use to account for that. There's also loss savings, and this looks more complicated than it really is, but loss savings is the fact that if you have distribution, generation in the distribution system, you're not only avoiding the energy as delivered, but you're also avoiding the energy that's lost in the transmission lines between the point of the central generation through the transmission, through the substation, through the distribution out to the system. So there's a little credit, so to speak, that you give there. And we have a few different factors depending on what the benefit category is there. In some cases, we might be more interested in kind of all the hours of the year. In some cases, we may be calculating a loss savings factor that's only related to, say, like the very peak hours of the year. And those are going to be two different factors. Anyway, we multiply this up, we sum them all up, and that gives us the value of that resource. So for this project, we thought it would be useful to not only look at just solar generation, but what if it was coupled with storage? And here's the problem. This comes from the Black and Veatch report that was alluded to earlier. And what we see is, and we weren't involved in this study, but we work very closely with Black and Veatch on other studies, and so they're a good team. And they show this is the output. I believe that's the Dana plant. And then we see this is the average hourly load for the whole utility. And this is not a single day. I believe. I mean, it's not real clear what it is, but it's an average of many days. And the problem that we see is that the solar output here really doesn't match very well at all at the peak. And what that means is that the solar output, it's going to still displace fuel. This energy is going to be provided. And that's good. And that means you can back off on these plants. And that's going to result in fuel savings, right? But what it doesn't do is allow you to dispatch that solar when it's needed most, at the time of the peak. And this is important because when the utility does its capacity planning, it has to not only provide that energy during the middle of the day, but it has to have power available in the evening. It has to be basically available when you need it. It has to be dispatchable. Okay? And so we think, solar is pretty well established as a technology. It's kind of new here in storage. And you could take this solar during the day. It could be storage behind the meter. It could be community scale. It could be utility-owned asset. In a way, that doesn't even matter, really. The only thing is that what you need is to be able to charge up using this renewable energy during the day and then dispatch it when you need it on demand. I should also say that storage actually has a couple of purposes, depending on what you're trying to do. One is to help stabilize the system frequency, so it's kind of second by second charging, discharging, and that kind of thing, like a shock absorber. If a cloud comes by and the solar drops, this can really kick in. And the cloud goes away, and you back off on the storage. That's one way to do storage. But what we're talking about is something not minute by minute or second by second, but rather, these are over hours. Okay, so this is a different use of storage. This is several hours of this resource being dispatched. So given that scenario, as we try to move Guam towards more and more renewables and meet some of its renewable energy goals, we have to face this problem. And there are different ways to do that. So we could, for example, do solar, and that's going to provide energy, but then we're going to have to address the system peak as well. One way to do it, and at Clean Power Research, we've done a lot of work in this area, is solar water heating controls. The fact is, those water heating, those tanks at the houses and at the hotels, those are batteries sitting there ready for use, right? You just have to control them. So you don't necessarily want to use the electricity to charge them up, you know, exactly, you know, when it reaches a certain thermal set point. You know, ideally, you want to move that load into the middle of the day. So as more and more solar comes onto the grid, whether utility scale or behind the meter, you want to be able to use that energy to charge your water battery, right? Your water heater. And so through a little bit of controls, you can do that. And that's one way, that's one solution right there for the grid. You know, it's not going to solve the problem completely, but it's part of the solution maybe. Charging during the middle of the day. Building pre-cooling, that's where you do a lot of air conditioning during the middle of the day, and the walls and the floors, they have a thermal mass. It's like a thermal lag, right? So here's another battery. It's not an electrical battery, but it's a thermal battery, right? We're not just talking about cooling the air. We're talking about deep cooling in the floors, and maybe even using materials that are meant for this purpose, right? And then you cool it down and it's comfortable, and then you know maybe in the evening you won't need it, you know, for a couple hours, that kind of thing. So that's one option. Other bedside management, and of course energy storage. All of these are tools that can be used to shift that peak. And just to simplify the study, we're really not going to get into a lot of those. We're just going to be doing energy storage. So we want to look at solar and look at solar alone, and we want to look at solar when combined with storage. Strategically, this storage market is exploding. 6 gigawatts of new installations in 2017 expected. In California, by law, the independently owned utilities have to procure 1,300 megawatts of energy storage. And that's a mix of transmission and distribution and customer-owned storage. Island microgrids are 36% of Tesla storage capacity, according to Bloomberg. There's projects in American Samoa, Fiji, Kauai. And for island microgrid storage, it just makes perfect sense as combined with solar, as we talked about. You know, having a battery doesn't solve the problem just by having it, hanging it on the wall. It also has to be operated in the right way. It has to be dispatched according to the needs of the grid, as we talked about. It has to hit that peak load, right? There's different ways to do dispatch.
Yeah, so in your framework, are you going to be considering things like the voltage support, the frequency support, frequency regulation support as part of the analysis?
So that's, I guess, some of the
and also the system support of these systems in regards to abnormal, like faulted conditions. So there's a whole list of things that we need to take a look at in order to look at this whole piece.
That's right, and we can include those things. The ones that you mentioned are kind of the hardest ones to look at, to be honest with you. But they're important, so you can, batteries essentially are like PV inverters. You know, you can control the reactive power, and so if you have an overvoltage, you can change it, and so that provides a benefit. It's typically going to be a small benefit, but it could be included in the study, and that's the sort of feedback that we'd be looking for. When we talk about control, and we're not going to get into the controls in the study, but just to sort of give an appreciation, there's different ways to do it. You know, obviously, you can have direct utility control. This is sending a signal to each resource. It could be a little, you know, 5 kilowatt-hour battery at the end of the, you know, somebody behind the meter somewhere. No reason the utility couldn't control that. On the other hand, maybe that's a little overkill. Maybe it's simpler to do control sort of indirectly through rates. You know, it could be there could be an hourly value-based rate or a load-based rate or something like that. Maybe a very steep TOU structure, not like typical TOUs, but it could be a TOU structure that really, really recognizes that on those very few on-peak hours, probably just a handful of hours of the year. Those are options there. The other thing about storage is that depending on the technology, the life of that technology comes into play. And that's going to be important. Just to give you a sense, like lithium ion, it's on the order of about 1,000 cycles. Okay? And if you're cycling that every single day, that's not going to last very long. Now it's not going to affect our value in a sense, right? Because what we're going to assume in our study is that it's available, to meet those peak hours, right? But from a cost standpoint, to put those systems in, we have to sort of seriously, roll up our sleeves and think through that one. So we did a very quick and dirty study on the island of Oahu, where we wanted to look at this. And we sort of think that kind of the prevailing wisdom is sort of, well, every hour, every day is kind of the same, the load shape is pretty much the same. It's really not seasonal. Well, what I'd like to do for this study is take a look at the Guam hourly loads for, say, a year, and see if there is any seasonal effect. You can see for a lot of that it's, the shape is basically the same. It's not a seasonal shape. But if you zero in a little bit, this is 3 months, August to November in red, and all the other 9 months are in blue. And so we can see that, in fact, maybe we don't have to run it every day of the year. Maybe we can preserve its cycle life, for another last for more years. Potentially, I don't know. We'll have to just see. But if we do that, maybe a given storage installation, maybe we'll only just do it 90 days a year, just for talking purposes. And that will provide that peak load reduction. But here, look at this day down here. Dispatching your storage on that day is not going to provide any benefit whatsoever, so why do it? It's just going to take life out of the battery. But we definitely want to do it here. So that would be something that would be interesting to take a look at in this study. Do we have this seasonal effect on A1? So this is also the Oahu study, so this is just an example calculation just to kind of get calibrated a little bit here. So from their IRP, their peaking capacity is around $2,000 a kilowatt. So if you want to install new capacity, that's about what they're looking at. Let's assume our 90 days of storage dispatch. We're going to look over 25 years of life. And according to the 90-day thing, roughly there's going to be one battery replacement about halfway through. Another important parameter or assumption we have to make, how much storage? So for every, we're going to assume 2 kilowatt hours of storage is required for every 1 kilowatt of inverter capacity, or of, say, solar capacity. So we have solar plus storage, 1 kilowatt system, that means 2 kilowatt hours of storage. 1 megawatt of solar, 2 megawatt hours of storage. Does that make sense? Because what that means is it's that 2 hours. It doesn't mean we're going to operate over 2 hours. We might operate over 4 hours, but it's going to ramp up, and then it's going to ramp down. You see, so alternatively, it could be, if you have 100 of these batteries out on the island at different locations, you could do 2 hours here, 2 hours here, 2 hours here, 2 hours here, and in the aggregate, it's controlled, so the peak is met. That's another alternative, right? But anyway, there's different approaches, but basically we're talking, that's sort of like a key assumption here, 2 kilowatt hours for every kilowatt.
So what kind of capacity factor were you finding in Oahu on this study for the storage? because, you know, we're hearing more, it's more like a 4-to-1 ratio here where the amount of the amount of energy that is created by solar arrays, right, given the intermittency, the capacity factor on the generation isn't 1-to-1, right? It's much.
So what this calculation is going to assume, you put in 2 kilowatt hours, 1 kilowatt, and that translates to 1 kilowatt of peak load reduction. So you get the full bang for the buck there. As for capacity factor, like on an energy basis, it's very, very low. I don't know the number on hand. But again, we're only talking 90 days a year. And it's sort of also that's how you define it, because there's also solar being delivered as well. Does that make sense? 20% round trip storage license, so it's not just get everything in, how they put in, you have to consider that. And if you make those assumptions, we're talking about 10 cents a kilowatt hour, essentially, the value. That is, for every out kilowatt hour that's discharged from this hybrid solar plus storage system, it has to provide the benefit, only capacity benefit, of 10 cents. And that 10 cents is then added to whatever other values there may be, the energy benefits and so on. And if you want to look up this study, you can do that. It was more of a methodology. Okay, so then the framework, again, just sort of like making sure we're all clear. There's some questions you sort of have to ask. And what benefits are to include? We already talked about that. We want to include environmental benefits. Do we want to include jobs benefits? There's a whole list of potential benefits that you could include. But that's sort of like question number one, you have to. And then another sort of subtle thing, benefits of what, right? Are we talking about, you look at all the solar installations on the island today, what's the value that they're providing? That's a different question than the next kilowatt that goes in of solar. It's going to have a different value than all the historical ones, right? Or over the next year. Or are you talking about a moving target, like over 25 years, for example? You have a growing set of installations. Now, is that the resource that we're looking at? And what are the study period? Are we talking about a one-year study period or the life of the system? So basically what we're proposing for this study framework is it's based on cost and benefits of systems installed in the current year, meaning the penetration level is not going to change significantly. It's just this year. But we're going to look at its benefits, full benefits over 25 years in the study period. Another source of confusion, if you compare some of these studies, is simply how do you present the results? And so what every year there's going to be potentially savings, and this is going up because, fuel prices, we're going to make an assumption about future fuel prices, the cost of, the cost is there, kind of increase. We could just sort of take those benefits and take the present worth and look at the first year value. And that means over this year, that's what it's worth. And that would be a true statement, right? And this is what we typically do in these studies, is we take the total value stream and we levelize it over 25 years. Okay? Now, these two streams have the same present value. It's like the same thing. It's just presented differently, okay? But it's huge. It's like a 30% difference. So we just have to be clear. So when we talk about levelized value, that you understand that there's sort of, it's higher than it would be this year, but it's lower than what it would be in the future. And it kind of works out the same thing. If there's some objection to doing that, then we don't have to do it that way. And then another subtlety here is, what energy are we really valuing? Okay? So here we've got PV and it's generation. If we're doing a straight body of solar, we would just take this and it goes out to the grid. And that's our energy, hour by hour, that we're going to value. In this case, some of that energy gets stored, there's losses incurred, and then it goes out and it's dispatched. So this net generation that we're trying to value is sort of a weird combination. Some of it's direct solar, but some of it's solar that's been run through this battery and you have some losses and it comes out. And that's the energy that we're looking at. Note that we're not looking at the customer load at all. That's a very site-specific analysis that we could do, but it's too hard, so we won't do that part. It doesn't include the customer load. This curtailment is something that we would do, say, in Hawaii, where they have rates set up so that customers who opt for solar could choose either, you know, a grid supply, which would be kind of a more traditional net metering, or a customer self-supply, which they're not so worried about because the customer agrees never to export onto the grid. Okay, and if you're going to be exporting, you have to actually throttle back here and reduce. So you're welcome to store energy and use the stored energy, but all of your energy use has to be here. Now, the utility can supply. It can still supply loads if needed, but basically you have no export out of the grid. So that's what curtailment is. And for this study, we're assuming, you know, no curtailment. That's kind of not the scenario.
I appreciate the difficulty of the customer load piece, but from what I've been reading, the location of DER is becoming increasingly critical to determine what circuits can handle what. I know we're doing a study now to exactly figure out what our circuits can handle and what we would have to invest in those circuits to increase those circuits' ability to handle more renewables. And so, but I noticed when you say customer load, we got 50,000 customers, you know, and we only have 1,500 NEMs, and we know where all our stuff is. So, you know,
right.
On one hand, it's simple because there's not that many.
Right.
But when I hear the industry talk about you better look at location, that you can't just say, well, you know, this is the capacity, and you can throw it wherever you want. We're realizing, no, you can't throw it wherever you want. Or if you, as you disperse it, you're going to have to upgrade some circuits. That's a cost now being imposed upon the system to handle more renewables. So when you mentioned you're not going to look at customer load in terms of its load, how are you going to think about the locational piece of customer load in this study?
Yeah, this is a great point. And just what I meant by that, first of all, is because we're not looking at the value out here. You know, so the meter is sitting right here. Okay, so we're not going to look at the net output after the customer because every customer is different. So this just simplifies it considerably. That's the use of it.
So that'll be on the generation side, okay? Right? Really, this picture is more the on the generation piece before we try to measure what does it impact on the circuit side, right? That's
right.
Why I read the slide.
I guess you could think of it like you have 2 meters, for example. You know, if you put a meter right here, that would be, you get one answer. If you put a meter here, that would be another. But you bring up a really good point, which is the locational differences, and that is a great interest. And of course, this is, you know, we always say that solar has every PV system has a different value, really, because it might be near the substation, it might be way down at the end of a really weak line, there might be differences in loss factors. And the point you bring up is, well, you're getting, in some cases, you'll get back feed, you'll get a voltage increase, and so you have to put in some equipment to help regulate voltage. You know, maybe your protection system is designed, you know, assuming, you know, flow is going to be in one direction, and now you have flow in another direction, it's going to trip off because it thinks it's a fault. So there are these costs, and the problem with these costs, even though they're real, in a study, that's a huge engineering study, honestly, and to just be, you know, kind of blunt, for a study like this, we're not going to be able to really, you know, go into the very site-specific results. And again, every system is going to be different. It's worth doing.
I think as long as your study, you know, I agree, you know, Jeff doesn't have $1 billion, and you know, you're trying to get this out for us. Just at least when you get to the end of your study, just maybe a commentary on the fact that you couldn't look at it per se, but these are the kinds of issues utilities all of us need to think about as we bring the location of DER into the formula. Because as we're also learning, you know, on the capacity side, solar's there, right? I mean, renewables are there. Generation is the challenge, but then we're also realizing that they are all implanted on a T&D system that has only got this much investment in them. And it's all seeing that to make them really work as well as we hope they can, you may have to start transplanting generation investments into T&D investments to get the system to be able to accept energy in a much different way than when we only had 19 generators down in PD doing all the work, right? And so even if you can't, your engagement doesn't allow you, you know, that specificity, I'd appreciate at least some comments from you, some thinking from you about more work this group could do to breathe some more detail into the locational impacts of distributed energy.
And if I could just make a comment on that. Yeah. So on our side, the data that we're providing Clean Power Research is over 800, 900 customers, right? And they are site-specific. Mm-hmm. What are they exporting back to the grid? So that's going to be on an hourly basis. That's the data that we're providing.
And that's
so that gives you the exportation back to the grid. You're really looking at more of a feasibility study on your feeders?
I'm looking more at valuation. In other words, it's something we're wrestling with. We've got bids now that are very attractive for utility scale generation, solar plus storage, right? But one issue was, well, one of these locales is further away from load, from our biggest load up to the north, is further away from load than some of the other locales. And there's so having a lot of renewable energy down south where we have a small population base isn't as helpful to having more renewable energy up north where you have a bigger population base, because this contribution to the grid, the net contribution of energy coming from the south, if we have, you know, if we're trying to displace the energy that is being used in the north, you know, it doesn't work as well. So that's why I'm saying locational aspects of DER is emerging in the study and in the industry as one more variable you have to think about. We can't presume, because not all locations are created equal. So even though you've got 800 spread out where they're spread out, I mean, I don't know where they're spread out, but I'm going to assume you have pretty good
distribution. They are our way.
Right. But we're also realizing the value of solar in an area that doesn't have as many customers, right? It would be higher in an area where we had more customers because of its impact on reduced T&D losses, right? So it's just a variable that I'm reading more and more needs to be thought about by all of us, right? And I appreciate that you can do only so much, and I just hope that when you do your study, you talk a little bit about this is what I could look at, this is what I couldn't look at, these are issues for further study or further review. I think that would be helpful.
And that is a completely fair point, and I think it's a good idea that will help the study. And for that matter, if you have done some work in that area, maybe we could take some intermediate results and feed it into this that are kind of already, or maybe, you know, what ideally we would have is like a range of costs. Because some systems you put in, there's no cost impact whatsoever. Some, depending on the location and the size, exactly as you say, well, you're going to have to do some reconductoring, you're going to have to boost some voltage or whatever. And that should be
factored. Or say no more here. And that's what Kauai and Hawaii have run into when they got circuits oversaturated. And the trade-off was, do we invest in those circuits and upgrade them so we can put some more in? Or they say, that's it. You know, they've made the value judgment that it wasn't worth it for them to upgrade T&D. I don't know if that's the same for us, but I was just taken by the fact that when they got to that point of the puzzle, Kauai in particular said, that's it. I'm not spending any more on T&D. This is community owned. You want to make them? You want to spend any more on T&D?
There's also a kind of a tricky issue here. It was who really should pay, right? I mean, if you have small systems, and then you get to the 15th system, well, they have to pay $100,000, you know, because they're going to cost the tax fee. Well, so you know,
it's an aggregation of systems.
Right.
It's an aggregation of systems.
And so it's utility is kind of thinking about, anticipating, hosting capacity constraints and so on.
Okay, just several things. We I think it's important to point out, so everybody's on the same page. One, the utility is owned by the ratepayers. So there is no utility benefit or utility expense. It all goes back to ratepayers. So you're talking about ratepayers. Ratepayers who are doing one thing, ratepayers who are doing something else. Ratepayers who add renewable onto their facility or their house, and ratepayers who don't. So that's the challenge that we have. That's the, and having said that, I would point out that your study is, we welcome your study because it's one more study that we're going to look at. It's not the only study that we will look at. We will consider our own study and your study and anybody else who wants to give us information. But I want to stress again, the decision will be made on where we go forward with net metering, renewable energy on the big picture. The decision is going to be made by 5 members of the commission and then goes to the PUC. Okay, that's the way this works. So I appreciate the study, and you know we appreciate that Marantz Energy is underwriting this study. So it's kind of like your study more than anything else, which is okay. What we want to take, it was offered back in November of last year. So we appreciate all information, and we like the exchange. So having said that, I think you've given us the overview.
Yep.
Okay. And so maybe this would be a good time to take a break. And then, because I would imagine what would happen is you need to get a lot of information from our people in terms of how do you get communicate and stuff so that you can work on some of the details. You'll want some information. They might want some information. That gets down into the weeds that I don't think we're necessarily going to want to get down into the weeds. Now, some of us know a little bit more than others, but given the time constraints, and we all have other things, other jobs to do, they get paid to be here. we have other jobs to do. So let's take a 5 or 10 minute break.
I just one quick question, since Cynthia's in framework. Sure. I appreciate everything you're saying, Mr. Chair. We're going to get more into the weeds, and we may not have to sit through it. Just when you get to framework, the other thing that I'd be very interested in learning as you do your study. And the chair has reminded everybody of a very key point. We're publicly owned. So there's some healthy debate going on about community solar, right? Except when you're publicly owned by the community, and we're looking at utility, depending on these bids, subject to final, but if you're looking at 6 to 8 cents with storage, one of the things Kauai has learned and shared with us is they said, well, if I can make energy for 6 to 8 cents with storage, why should I pay more than 6 to 8 cents for net energy produced by anyone else, right? And so the thing I'm curious about is, if you could just add to the framework, is this, if you can, or even if it's just a one-page discussion, when you're publicly owned, what is the difference between community solar and publicly, NRG is community solar from our point of view. All the ratepayers contribute to it, except for the NEM customers who are making their own, which is kind of how you want it. The NEM customers make energy themselves. The non-NEM customers are benefiting from utility-scale solar. There's a movement we've noticed among some of our elected leaders to say, well, GPA should do community solar. Now, we just came from CEPA. The uptick on community solar is pretty lousy. It's very slow. Even with money being put out there, and so there's that one issue about, and this is personal opinion, but I think people overstate how many people can really afford to buy a panel, much less buy a system, particularly, and this is something I hope you keep in the mind at the back of your work, the average income on Guam is very low. We have maybe, out of 50,000 customers, only 12 or 13,000 pay online or at the bank. The other 37,000 come in here every payday Friday on the 46th day to avoid disconnection to pay their bill. So when you say, well, if you do a community solar, sure, there's thousands of people that want to buy 5 panels, 10 panels. Are there really? When you have so many people, the low-hanging fruit have already bought their systems, either pay any, no money down or borrow their own money, right? Everyone else is helping to pay for NRG. They're benefiting from the fuel savings. That, to me, is... in a publicly owned entity, that's community solar. We didn't allocate each each panel to 50,000 people and say, give me $495 a month. You know, we just bought, you know, we just did a PPA. So what, in the framework, I'd also be interested in any conversation or thinking you might have on when you're publicly owned, is there really a big difference? And is there a place in Guam for an effective community solar program where, coming back from SIPO, all we heard was, yeah, we hardly have loaned any money, our programs are really slow, and you know that's helpful to us just so we can kind of focus on the stuff we can really pull off and not be distracted working on stuff that in the big picture may not be as helpful to us when you're already publicly owned.
Okay. So having said all of that, let's take a little bit of a break. The restroom facilities are down the hall that way, just for anybody's needs. Jeff, you want to
say? Can I ask just one question?
Sure.
So the point of contact on your side, is it you, Mr. Bruce?
No, it's John Beneventi, general manager.
For
that. Okay. And I'll designate who.
And he'll designate who.
I think our concept, we're quite new to doing a lot of consultantship or questions. Because we really put together our site,
NDA, data being trained,
request for information. That way we have a time to make sure that what information
no, I'm like before we even talk.
As complete and as accurate as possible.
Grant.
So it's hard for us to do. So if you put it to us, then that way we do it right now for you. And similar to like rate proceedings, just a function for the work moderation.
And just final thing, you know, John will tell you how to contact and there's obviously you understand there's going to be some data you can't get. Customer information is not okay. So there, whatever it is he can't give, he can't give. But we take all the information, we'll try and put it together. Just a thought, if you said the study could take as long as 60 to 90 days, is that what I heard? Okay. Because we would like to move the discussion along. We want to make a decision at some point. But we want to give you the opportunity to give input. This is, we're trying to be very open and transparent here. We want everybody to give input, so we don't want to cut it short and say, well, we're going to make a decision in 30 days, you guys are out. So please, if you could, it might be helpful for us if you could give us a firmer time frame as you go forward. Okay? So that you know, if you're done in 60 days, we can schedule another meeting. Okay, and get so that then you can give the results. We can share it with everybody. Okay, and then we can kind of chew on it, take it, consume it, and everything, and then we can move forward again. Okay, so you know, 60 to 90 days is nice, but I would appreciate as you go through your process, if you think, well, I'm going to be done in 53 days, start giving us a heads up and say, you know, you might want to think about a meeting in this time frame. Not a specific date, but, you know, the last half of the month of February or whatever. Okay? How about that? Oh, yeah. And by the way, we'd appreciate it if you gave us a copy of the presentation today.
Okay.
Because, you know, some of us are not going to stay for the whole thing. But, you know, maybe we might want to look at it later. So if you could give the presentation to the general manager, he'll make sure he gets it to us. Okay?
Thank you very much for coming out to Guam.
Is this your first trip, by the way?
It is.
Oh, welcome to Guam.
Welcome to my master.
Yes. Okay. It's a pretty island.
Okay. Okay. Are you all good for calm down?
No kidding. This is the week from hell. So today we last night we hosted the congresswoman from American.
Yeah. I heard on the radio today. Okay.
So we did that. You know. Yeah. Bob calls me while we're traveling.
Yeah.
I go, oh, now you need the elite school to help you.
Can you remind me that tomorrow, how many graduating? 80, 90?
From
EPI?
Tomorrow? Yeah. How many are going to, a bunch are going to UOG, right?
No, but just remind him,
another elite?
90?
Yeah.
We're no longer EPI.
I might not be. I got you. Oh, that's
GWA.
Joe and I have been talking to talk to the city again on the board. So they figured 60 days, right, from the time you file for them to kind of chew down and start. Then the real
catching the
first.
No, that's
so,
what
you are.
So, what?
We're opening that one.
I'm an engineer. Okay, I'm a recovering engineer.
Recovering or retiring engineer?
In a few years, maybe retiring.
That's their bottom.
I'm surprised you still have hair.
My brother Matt, he's crowning. My brother Ken, he's got one. Like uncle, right?
Like give us some guidance.
Both uncles.
So you got the good genes.
I don't know. I think my hair is strong because I'm like this all the time. Good roots.
We don't want to, I mean, that's what the PUC wanted, and now we're going to favor the new generation. I mean, we already have the old debt service in our rates, and it'll retire. It's retired. Right? Yeah, we're paying it down. Yeah. We hope not. We do need to. I think we're going to talk about this more Saturday.
I'll bring out that thing that you showed us.
That'd be great.
I kept all the documents. The meanest lawyer children. I walked in and I'm like this big, right? And I'm like, yeah, but he was
very good though.
He's a Greek, right? Because they knew his language.
Lithuanian?
Eastern
European.
He knew those guys.
He knew his
You know what happened to him?
He's a fisherman.
I don't know if that's a good reference.
Yeah.
No, it's a merchant.
And then he went to law school.
Yeah.
And now he's a.
Yeah, because he didn't want to be a merchant marine. He's a big guy. That's what I was telling the
And you'll know their parents and grandparents.
Not that you want, but they insist. I want to meet your
priority. So we found out that the Nationals is a night game before the 9 o'clock Sunday. It's the only game we can go to. So we'd have to go there, come back, and be back in town. We'll look in New York.
My girl's a trooper. Taylor, she wants to, what do you call that? Because she said, let's take a trip to a team or a game. You don't want to go to a game.
I said, we'll write the letter. I love going.
It's only for a day game.
Like New York. You're right, we are on the countdown.
Yeah, I'll be here for the exercise.
American
All right, guys. So
American Samoa project. Yeah. 1.4 gigawatt.
Let's talk before we go. Total bid.
With the wind turbine. So he said, American Samoa didn't get did not put in that bid. He had a good chance of getting that bid, of getting that grant.
Right. There were so many EV proposals last, you know, 2016, and solar systems. So they just said, we're not giving it any. Because then they're going to say, why did you get that one now? That's why the company didn't do so of that one, that's why I was thinking that you really are going to put it to because I was going to add, you know, the proposal.
Not just solar stations, but the whole is that we gave him a list of 15 different things.
I mean, the list.